Equibe's OS vulnerability is worth taking seriously, Marcus. The security bulletin QSB 118 describes an arbitrary code execution vulnerability via the CopyterVM feature's error reporting backchannel. For listeners unfamiliar with Equibe's, it's a security-focused operating system that runs applications in separate virtual machines, so that a compromise of one VM doesn't automatically compromise the rest of your system. The idea is compartmentalization as a security primitive.
The vulnerability is particularly ironic because it exploits the error reporting mechanism, the very feature designed to tell you something went wrong. An attacker who can trigger specific error conditions in the CopyterVM process can potentially use that error channel to execute arbitrary code. The Equibe's OS team has published the bulletin and patches are available, but it's a reminder that security architecture doesn't make you immune to implementation bugs. The compartmentalization model protects you from many threats but not from vulnerabilities in the mechanisms that cross those compartment boundaries.
And the CopyterVM feature is exactly one of those boundary-crossing mechanisms. By design, it moves data between isolated environments. So the attack surface for that feature is necessarily elevated. It's the bridge between compartments, and bridges can go both ways.
The California story is more cheerful and has broader implications. California lawmakers voted unanimously, which in Sacramento is genuinely remarkable, to exempt software distributed under GPL, MIT, BSD, and Apache licenses from the state's age verification law. The law would have required platforms distributing certain software to verify user ages, and there was genuine concern that Linux distributions, package managers, and open source repositories would be caught in the scope.
The HN thread on this was fascinating because it got into the technical absurdity of applying age verification to a package manager. Imagine being asked for your date of birth before running apt-get install. The exemption is sensible policy, but it also raises a question that the comments explored in some depth. What is the underlying theory that makes open source software categorically different from other software for age verification purposes?
The licensing structure is doing a lot of work here, and I think this is a good moment to actually explain the legal framework that makes open source special in the eyes of regulators. There's a concept from antitrust law, bear with me, that's useful for understanding why policymakers treat open source differently. Under the Sherman Antitrust Act, which has been U.S. federal law since 1890, the question of market power isn't just about raw size. You can have 90% market share and still not be a monopolist in the legal sense if you got there through superior products or innovation, and if the market remains contestable.
Right, and that's a useful parallel to how the California legislature seems to be thinking about open source licenses. The GPL and its cousins are specifically designed to prevent the kind of lock-in and market foreclosure that antitrust law worries about. If the code is freely available, if anyone can fork it, if the license actively prevents one entity from cornering the market on modifications, then the software is structurally different from a proprietary platform that can extract rents and exclude competitors. The exemption is essentially recognizing that open source licensing solve some of the problems that age verification laws are trying to address through a completely different mechanism.
To bring the antitrust framing home with a concrete example, if Microsoft required you to verify your age before downloading Windows, that's a company with significant market power making a gatekeeping decision about access. If the Linux kernel requires age verification, that's conceptually incoherent because there's no gatekeeper. The kernel is on GitHub, it's on every mirror on the planet, it's been redistributed billions of times. The licensing is doing the work that market structure does in antitrust analysis. It distributes power so thoroughly that centralized gatekeeping becomes impossible.
The FreeCore True NAS story is in the same philosophical neighborhood. For listeners who don't follow the NAS space, network attached storage, True NAS Core was the open source, community-focused version of True NAS, built on FreeBSD and ZFS. IX Systems, the company behind True NAS, has been shifting focus toward True NAS Scale, the Linux-based enterprise version, and the community felt that True NAS Core was being deprioritized. FreeCore is a fork project aimed at keeping that community-driven version alive.
The HN thread had 64 comments, which for a storage software fork is actually a lot. ZFS on FreeBSD has a dedicated community of people who care deeply about data integrity, and they're worried about losing the platform they've built their home labs and small business infrastructure on. The fork announcement at FreeCore.org lays out the governance model. They are trying to build something more like a community foundation than a company-controlled project.
There's a pattern here that Marcus and I have watched play out several times. Company acquires or builds popular open-source software, shifts it toward enterprise revenue, community feels abandoned, fork emerges. MariaDB from MySQL, LibreOffice from OpenOffice, and now FreeCore from TrueNAS Core. The interesting question is whether the fork has enough core developers and institutional support to maintain the ZFS and FreeBSD integration long-term, because those are not simple codebases to steward independently.
The EVE Online Python migration adds yet another dimension to this open-source story. CCP Games announced that EVE Online, a game that has been running since 2003 and has a notoriously complex economic simulation at its core, is beginning the migration from Python 2 to Python 3. Python 2 reached end of life in January 2020. CCP has been running on it for 6 years past that date.
6 years of security patches, they've had to backport themselves. 6 years of not being able to use modern Python libraries. 6 years of technical debt compounding. The HN thread was full of people who have done similar migrations at scale, and the consensus was that CCP has their work cut out for them. EVE's codebase is enormous. The game has been under active development for over 2 decades, and Python 2 to Python 3 isn't just a version bump. There are semantic changes in string handling, integer division, print functions, and dozens of other places where code that appears to work will silently behave differently.
The economics of this are interesting from a business perspective. EVE Online has a subscriber base that's been remarkably stable for a game of its age, around 300,000 to 400,000 active accounts historically. The migration is a massive engineering investment that produces zero visible features for players. It's entirely infrastructure. And yet it's necessary because continuing on Python 2 indefinitely becomes increasingly untenable as the rest of the software ecosystem moves on and security vulnerabilities accumulate without patches.
RISC-V getting official CPython support is the headline that ties this together. The Python Software Foundation's announcement that RISC-V is now a Tier 1 supported architecture means that CPython, the reference implementation of Python, will have official builds, maintained CI, and guaranteed release artifacts for RISC-V hardware. That's a significant commitment from the PSF. It means that when EVE Online eventually finishes its Python 3 migration, Python itself will be fully portable to the open hardware architecture that many people believe will define the next decade of computing.
And that's not a trivial belief. RISC-V has been gaining institutional momentum. C5, Alibaba, and a growing roster of chip designers are investing in RISC-V implementations. Having official Python support removes one of the friction points for deploying Python workloads on RISC-V hardware. The HN thread had people pointing out that this matters especially for embedded systems, where RISC-V is already competitive and Python's approachability makes it attractive for IoT and edge computing use cases.